pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Hour number two begins right now. About a half hour, we'll hear from State Senator Chris Elliott. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. Also in the 11 o'clock hour, Jared Hudson making his return to the program. He's a candidate for United States Senate. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me, and we'll do our best to make sure we respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. I'm going to roll through these texts. I didn't really get to many of them in the last hour, but we'll see what we can do here. Unnamed texter, I can't believe Ivy's approval numbers. If by chance they are accurate, our voting electorate is dumber than I thought. I don't think it's a dumb electorate. It's disengaged. And look, the bar for governor in this state when Ivy entered office was very low. Consider that. Consider how Robert Bentley exited office in scandal. Riley didn't really have scandal. Sigelman obviously did later after he left office. We had Fob James, who had a tough primary. He was a one-termer. You go before that, little Jim Folsom for a brief period of time, Guy Hunt. It's been a bumpy road. Guy Hunt leaving office, obviously, the way he did. So you got to go back. Granted, it's more than 30 years, three decades. But to have three governors who either exited office because of some kind of scandal or later were, you know, as the case with Sigelman, later had to go to federal prison. The bar was just very, very low. And I think that has something to do with Governor Ivey's high approval numbers. And I don't think that they're as high now as they were maybe 2-3 years ago. Once she won re-election in 22, she's been on cruise control. And I said this on this program. I've now been on the air here on FM Talk 106.5 since the August of 2020, right in the middle of COVID, right around the time the 2020 presidential election was about underway and then wrapped up, and they were gearing up for 2022. And I said this the entirety of 21 and most of 2022. Look, if Kay Ivey wins without a runoff, without having to really put forth a serious campaign, I don't think that she did. It is the only way to read this is she has a mandate. She has a mandate to continue what she's doing, the hide in the basement strategy. There's no other way around it. Now, the field she ran against with Lindy Blanchard and Tim James was not, you know, the strongest of fields. But she had a mandate. The Alabama voters said, hey, we want more of this. And at the time, more of this was more lockdowns, longer mask mandates. Essentially, we allowed the business community to sort of dictate to us who our governor was going to be. It's an important office. And I don't think it's a question of intellect or anything of that sort, unnamed texter. I think the voters just so disengaged, A, from state politics that, you know, it's the Fox Newsification of politics. You feel like you're checking the box, right? That you are engaged, that you're keeping up with the news, that you know what's going on. And when it comes to that state stuff, And this is the house I grew up in. That's small potatoes. That doesn't impact my 401k. I don't have time for that. I need to know what the latest scandal inside the White House is. Or whatever the latest Fox News topic du jour. Why the Iran military strikes are the best thing to ever happen to the country. I don't know. Whatever you get off of Fox News these days. We don't have a very robust, and I'm part of it. I'm part of the problem here. We don't have robust state political coverage in Alabama. The things that they get away with in Montgomery, and that includes the governor's office, but certainly the legislative branch, and sometimes even the judiciary, never would get away with at a national level. You never would get away with a media blackout 2 weeks before a Republican primary. You would never have a governor who's MIA most of the time. She did do a speech at Huntsville, I think, yesterday. But you never would get away with having a president not doing press conferences. No media availability. Has not done a sit-down interview in years. Literally. I think this time, her normal go-to outlets, for years it was Matt and Audio 99.5, but they split up. And Matt Murphy's now on in Nashville. So it was always Todd Stacey or Don Daly on Capital Journal. You'd see her show up on WSFA on occasion. But they don't do that anymore. When it was Governor Ivey's time to be on with Todd Stacey, it was her chief of staff, Liz Fillmore, who sat in for her. There has been no media presence. And we saw how we hammered Joe Biden for that. I mean, it's not a matter of dumb or stupid. It's just that I just don't think that people care. It frustrates me. But they know they do it. They operate that way because they get away with it. And the people who do raise a ruckus, the Jeff Poers, Dale Jackson, Amy Beth and Allison on the right side, 1819 News, I mean, we're just, they're marginal, chronic malcontents who are just going to complain about everything. You never can make those people happy. Look at all the good stuff we're doing. We're passing an economic incentive package, and we're teaching workforce skills. You never talk about that. You just want to talk about the bad. That's literally what they will tell you. But the bar, the standard, is so much lower in Alabama. And I think it just has to do with more of the civic engagement in state politics. Trying to change that, it's a very difficult process. I'm preaching to the choir right now. I get it, but the other problem with Alabama politics, and this is what intrigued me about being down here, it's hard to understand it. Two budgets, 67 counties, state senate, state house, not really sure who my state senator is. I don't have time for that. I barely can keep up with who my congressman is. I just want to go to the gas pump and not have to drop $100 to fill up my tank. I get it. But there's just a lack of engagement. And that's why you have what you have with Governor Ivey's approval numbers. Yeah, she's doing fine. She's better than the other governors we had. just the potential is to do so much more and do so much better and just be in the you know, crony capitalist, picking winners and losers, big business governor. It's about improving the quality of life for Alabamians. And their whole game plan, literally they had the game plan, is, well, we'll just recruit a bunch of industry here, get people to work, and that'll improve their quality of life. But there's more to it than that. Sure, you could, like, it's like leading a horse to water, but you can't force it to drink. Some people just don't want to work. There's barriers to the workforce. Maybe it's drugs. Maybe it's child care. And the incentive isn't there. Well, you still have an underemployment, workforce participation problem in this state. But, you know, you don't think about it on a state level. You look at the president and who's in Congress, or you know, if you're even looking at Congress. Primarily, the average Alabamian probably looks at who is president. But you ask why Governor Kay Ivey has high approval numbers, that's why. And you can't apply the D.C. standard to Montgomery. In D.C., it's very partisan, very R versus D. In Montgomery, there's very little D. Probably too much, more D than is warranted given the numbers they have. But the skirmishes take place within the Republican Party and by virtue of our system that allows for these closed-door caucus meetings, it takes place behind closed doors. It's just a reality. That's where all the decisions are made. Maybe the federal courts, when they look at this reapportionment, will say, hey, we need to know what's going on behind these closed doors, because they're certainly going to subpoena emails and text messages for discovery. But that's just the system we have. And it's until people understand that, things will not change. Christina McGinnis sounds great in her interview. Those ads with her impersonations have the adverse effect. I don't know. I think it's different. It's memorable, and I think it'll work for her, at least down here. I just don't know how much she's catching on in other parts of the state. I think she's going to do well in Baldwin County and Mobile County, but then Jack Williams is going to do well too, so it's a battle for the rest of the state. Pat writes, old Barry Moore wants 7-0, other countries do it with 40%. You mean other states are do it with 40% Republican votes, yet Alabama's 35. He is literally wanting to do it with what he is complaining about other states are doing. Well, I think his point was this, Pat, that other states are doing it. I'm not a fan of the approach, but we can't exist under two rule books. We can't have a set of rules for Democrats and a set of rules for Republicans. That, and then you're going to lose every time if we always take the high road. So we have to play by their rules. Text line, once again, 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
On a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one can change my mind, but Mama tried.
Get on me, want to know, Hank, why do you drink? Hank, why do you roll smoke? Why must you live out the songs that you wrote?
Oh, welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Damn Yankee writes, Mobile trivia question, are any Chinese companies operating within Mobile City Limits? The answer is yes. Yeah, and I remember this coming up during, was it Stanhagen when he had a bill to exclude Chinese-owned companies from operating or owning property in Alabama? that there was something that was going to be grandfathered in at the port. Jeff, gas that is sitting underground at my local gas station came from one that was pulled out of the ground months prior. What gives local stations the right just to go up and down with their price based on news reports? Capitalism. It's free market. You don't want to pay their prices, go buy it somewhere else. But we have a jittery market. And these retailers are trying to brace for what is coming in that's going to be more expensive. So, I mean, they had to pay it forward. So they buy the gas, their wholesale price or whatever it is, and then they sell it to you. But that next shipment's going to be a little bit more. So what are they going to do in the interim to be ready for that cost? Is they're going to raise the gas price that's currently there. But that gives them the right to do it. Now you don't have to buy it. Maybe you want gasoline to be regulated like a utility. Oh, they tried that. They tried putting price caps on it, and it just resulted in long lines at the gas station. We have a market economy. Sometimes it works in our favor. I think it gives you the best economic freedom rather than some kind of central planning. But that's the answer to your question. Baldwin County has a free alert system for property, writes an unnamed texter. Chris, Jeff, you're about to have the man's ears put this bug in it. I implore you to do so. This will top everything else. This is a huge partisan issue. Make it a policy that the person selling the land has to physically come to the probate office and present paperwork, not electronically. I don't know that you can do that. I don't even know if that's possible. Some people just can't get around. Maybe you need to have a representative of the person, a lawyer, or some kind of person. Tim, Jeff, you get to know when to hang up your cleats. I think she's a very sick woman anytime they start taking fluid off of your lungs. I think it's not a good thing. Well, you know where I am on it, Chris. I mean, Tim, I said this. When she was reluctant to call the special session after the Louisiana case, it's like, if you don't want to be governor, if this looks like too much work, too heavy of a lift, too much for your staff to manage on their way out the door here, then step aside and let Ainsworth finish out your term. But I think she heard from you guys, and she reacted accordingly. She's going to be governor as long as she gets away with it, and assuming she's going to be able to get away with it until she leaves office next year. 10 years for governor is too long. Let's see. I'm not going to read that one. Jeff, again, 50%, 56% of the American public cannot read beyond the sixth grade level, even in lower southern states. Trying to understand why Alabama cares more about national politics and homegrown issues directly correlates with education. Well, what do you want to do? You want to have a reading test, a civics test, or you want to go back to the 1960s and have a literacy test to be able to vote? Is that what you want to do there, mommy issues? Look, they pay taxes. Their vote counts just as much as yours. I don't think it's education. I just think it's time. Like I said, I grew up in a house. My father was, he had a MBA from Mississippi State's magna cum laude. He just didn't care about local politics. Very educated man. Couldn't tell you who his congressman was. Couldn't tell you who Spencer Baucus was when he was alive. But he knew everything about what was going on with the Rush Limbaugh show. I don't think it's an education problem. I think you're misreading this. I think it's just a political culture problem. A culture problem in general. The domination of national politics over local politics. In Alabama politics, to be fair, it's not easy to understand. It's a complicated system. It took me 20 years to figure it out. I do this for a living. Let's get a break in here. I'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound just watch old Bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Son, never mind them brakes. Let it all hang out cause we got to run to pay.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Hit us up there, and I'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. Still to come here in about an hour from now, Jared Hudson. He's a candidate for the United States Senate. We'll hear from him. Getting these guys in, this is it is the go time, if you will, for the primary coming up on Tuesday. Joining us now, speaking of the primary, he's an opponent, but our returning champion here a day early with us, State Senator Chris Elliott joins us. Senator, how are you?
And I'm doing great. Appreciate you having me on every week so that it's not just primary time we get to talk like so many of these other folks, but I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's like pulling teeth to get people to come on, but man, they want to be on every day and during election season.
Well, I like to think we've got a little bit more depth than that. So we're here year round.
And like I said, we appreciate that. Well, we'll start with the campaign. How do you feel? And this will be it with you and I guess, until people go to vote.
That's right. Next time we will be past the primary election on Tuesday, and so I'm looking forward to running through the tape. I'm really happy with the campaign that we've run. Certainly a positive campaign focused on relationships and accomplishments and a real demonstrable record of success. But with a lot of energy, right, and activity at the same time. And so we've been able to certainly get out and meet a lot of people. I think day before yesterday, I posted that we will have knocked on over 20,000 doors in the district by the time this is all over with. And just met people where they are, talked to them about their concerns, listened to what they're interested in, talked to them about what we've done, defended our record, and explained what we're going to do next. And so I'm really happy with the energy and momentum that we've got going into Tuesday.
Well, let me start on this. Governor calling a special election now for August the 11th, qualifying May 20th through the 22nd. Is this what we kind of expected?
It is. That's why the legislature went back into special session to accommodate the what we anticipated was going to be a Supreme Court ruling in the Calais case and how it applied to Alabama's maps. I heard part of your interview with Coach earlier where he was, certainly very supportive of what the legislature did and the actions that we took. And I certainly appreciate him saying that. Look, it was a tough special session. I mean, you saw a video of me trying to pass the bill, in the middle of an evacuation, a tornado warning, the fire alarms going off, flooding and protests and everything else. And so it was certainly a stressful special session, but I think it's impactful because it's going to change, how many Republicans we have in Congress. And we have seen over the last 2 years just how important it is to have just one more member or just two more members in the Republican Party in Congress, and how impactful that is for our country as a whole and the direction in which it's headed. And so I'm pleased to have, carried some of that legislation, got it across the line, and see it go to effect.
Well, let's talk about the special election. Right the day after the primary is qualifying time. I mean, I feel like it's going to be a free for all. I think these guys who have been campaigning for AL1 who are running in AL1 and AL2 will have a built in advantage just by longevity. But I suspect crowded fields. And I wonder, would we see some of your colleagues run from the legislature for these seats, even though they're up on the ballot in November?
Well, it's certainly a unique situation. There's no question about that. And so you've got four congressional races across the state that will be participating in this short special election with a what's commonly referred to as a jungle primary, right, where there's no runoff in the primary on August 11th. And so, you may very well see House members or senators or commissioners that are on the ballot right now that have been advertising and out and about and asking for folks' vote that take, this is an opportunity to run for Congress because it's a whole new election. Just starting right there, with qualifying on the Wednesday after the primary, only a 3-day period to qualify and then, literally back off to the races. And so, I know, you know, I've talked with some of my colleagues around the state. You know, there some of them maybe looking at that, may decide to do that, may not. We'll have to see what happens. And we'll know, you know, probably this time next week if some of them decide to do that. And so it'll be very interesting to see how that works out.
And you feel good about it, you know, the time window. It gives, I guess, the one built-in advantage not to doing it right away is it gives some of these legal proceedings time to take place, to need to take place.
It does. It does. And so, you know, we've had the time, not too much time and not a lot of time, but enough time for all of this to kind of move through the process, to get through the primary election, get into the new, you know, special election cycle. And then, of course, we, the legislature, built in enough time, and the governor in her called special election with the August 11th election left enough time for, you know, for what needs to happen on the back end, whether that's printing ballots for a general election and any party action to take place. And so there is enough time. It's not way too much time, but it's enough.
Let's talk about this. And, you know, I'm we are inundated with these mailers, and a lot of them have your face on them. I'm sure around the state, they're getting their fair share. This sports betting stuff, ACF, American Conservative Fund, just inundating mailboxes with these mailers, and sometimes even to the chagrin of the candidate that they're supporting. We know Pro Tem Gudger kind of came out, spoke out against it, said that this is not something that I, you know, the way I want to present myself to the voters. So you've had your fair share of these sent out. What's your take on those?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the shortest answer is I just shared the Pro Tem's thought on my Facebook page. I mean, I think he said it perfectly. And that was, you said chagrin, I'll say frustrated. I mean, it's very frustrating as a candidate to have some outside interest group hijack your message and overwhelm the message that you're trying to put out, right? If you see the mailers, I think it's four of them that we've sent out total, are all about, you know, what we've accomplished, specifics on, you know, legislative priorities and what we've been able to accomplish in our time in office. And then you see these other mailers, sometimes two or three I got four the other day in my mailbox that obviously I've never seen before, never approved, have no approval process over. But it just seems gratuitous and wasteful. And it's certainly not the type of message that I want to portray. But Jeff, you know, when I take a step back and say, why is this happening? Why are people that I may not necessarily be aligned with? And I think my voting record speaks for that. Why are they spending this money in my race or another race? And honestly, when I take a step back, Jeff, I think this is that particular special interest group trying to flex for the next quadrennium and show members just how much money they have and how much they're willing to spend in a legislative race to try to influence future votes, as opposed to try to say thank you or whatever for some particular vote, because that's not consistent with how I voted in the past. And so I think that's what's happening now. This is messaging to the other members of the legislature that may or may not have opposition to try to show them just how much money they have and how much money they will spend, whether it's efficient or not. And it's very frustrating to those of us who are candidates who are trying to closely craft and market our message.
Well, tell me this. I mean, are they flouting the laws, your opponent and a bunch of others who are on the receiving end or the other end of this are complaining they're not filing properly? And I'm not an expert on the laws, but are they playing a little fast and loose here?
They very well may be. And I'll tell you, there are a lot of candidates in this election cycle that I've seen that are not filing their campaign finance reports correctly and are not doing it correctly. And I've seen a lot of that in my race too. But there will be a time where all of that gets fleshed out. And listen, I think that group, you know, that's not, I will say, benefiting, I'm not sure if it's a benefit or not, but not seeing flyers put out in their races, or, you know, they're like, no, I want that. I think these guys are, you know, doing something illegal. Well, investigate, absolutely investigate. And I think they should. And I think, you know, the Secretary of State and the Ethics Commission should look into whether or not they're doing it right or not. And certainly we always want to uphold the law one way or the other. But from a candidate standpoint, it is so incredibly frustrating to lose really lose control of your message. And that goes to these text messages and phone calls and all of these other things. And so I would just encourage voters, you know, listen, you listen to me every week on the show. You know, you see me in church, you see me in the Publix and, you know, shopping, and I've got a record a mile long, you know, vote for somebody that's got a record and a proven track record of doing something. But vote for them based on that, not based on whether or not you got too many mailers from somebody that, you know, that the candidate had no control over.
Well, tell me this, since this is the topic at hand, I mean, where are you on sports betting as it pertains to the entirety of the gambling question?
Well, look, the last vote I took was against gaming in Alabama because the bill that was before me was way too broad, and it didn't just expand gaming, it expanded it expanded government, and that is something that I don't think we need to do. Do I think the people ought to have the right to vote on, or the ability to vote on, a lottery? Yes. Once we get further than that, the devil really is in the details. I want to make sure we absolutely do not expand casinos in the state of Alabama. Am I in a position where I may be okay with them staying in a very constricted space where they currently exist by local constitutional amendment? Yeah, maybe so. One of the things that concerns me about sports betting right now is that it is effectively going on in the state of Alabama right now. It's just illegal. And so anybody with a phone and a VPN can be betting overseas, you know, right now. And that is an incredibly frustrating thing that we need to get control over. How we do that and what that looks like, I haven't seen the perfect solution yet. And so that's why, you know, it's always so much more complicated than just, you know, put it on the ballot for folks to vote on it. And one of the reasons I voted against the last bill.
Well, and talk about this, I mean, yes, we have it going on, and I know people who bet. They know all the workarounds, but it changes things, not necessarily that, yeah, if you want to gamble, you're going to gamble, but when you put that state seal of approval on it, when the state has the incentive because they're collecting revenue, or tax revenue, or whatever, they're cut, then there's the incentive for them to encourage it, and I don't know that the state necessarily should be doing that, just given all the other like social concerns we have around Alabama.
You are exactly right. It's no different than the state encouraging this, you know, the consumption of liquor or cigarettes, all of which we put our state, you know, tax stamp and seal on. Heck, the state's in the liquor business, right? And so the question for voters and for legislators is, does the state need to be in the gambling business, which absolutely preys, there's no other way to put it, preys on those that are, you know, less fortunate. I mean, the folks that typically gamble the most are in a lower socioeconomic bracket than those that don't. And so it is a serious tax on those folks and oftentimes can lead to disastrous results. And I think that, you know, if and when any of this comes up for a vote, that's something that the voters are going to have to look really hard and long at as to whether or not that's something that we want in the state of Alabama. And it's why it's so important to make sure you get the details right. And honestly, I think it's really instructive too, to look at just how much money is getting thrown around right now and whether or not we want to make that a permanent institution, a permanent situation in the state of Alabama and in our state house races.
Well, let's address one more thing on this. And this is the rumor mill going on in the hallways during the special session. But if the primaries don't go the way the pro-gambling crowd, whoever that is, the members of the House and some of these, you know, third parties, and they get some anti-gambling lawmakers that really cloud the future in the new legislature starting next year, would Ivy look at a special session to go ahead and try to do something before the new legislature comes in, before the general election and before the new governor comes in?
I do not see any appetite whatsoever for yet another special session on this topic or any other. We just got out of our 10th special session in, or as Chris Pringle calls them, the extraordinary session in 10 years. And I don't see any appetite for that moving forward. Listen, Coach is going to come in with a whole new perspective on this. We'll see what the new slate of legislators look like. It will upset the apple cart, you know, reset the table, if you will. And this debate will start over entirely again with a new governor and new legislators in both the House and Senate. And so we'll just have to see, you know, how that plays out. But I do not see any appetite for a special session.
And the last question, we'll get you out of here on this, kind of looking at the elections coming up on Tuesday. Aside from your race, the others, your colleagues, I mean, is there any anticipation that we would see, you know, I don't think there'll be a wave or any anti-incumbent insurgency, but there may be one or two surprises is kind of the way I'm looking at it.
There may be, you know, we've got some retirements in the Senate with some folks that are not coming back, and so those will be new faces. And listen, in a body of 35, you know, 2 to 5 member change can be a sea change, especially on issues like gaming. And so we'll have to see, you know, there are some races that are contested that are closer than others. Fortunately, I don't feel like mine's one of them, but there are others. And so we'll have to see how those play out. But we know we're going to have 2 new members. And then we'll have to see, you know, whether or not any of these other make changes. And so we'll be watching those close on Tuesday. And then we'll be watching Wednesday and Thursday and Friday carefully to see, you know, who, if anybody, gets into these congressional races and how that changes those races and how that shakes that up.
Senator, we always appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds great. Everybody make sure to go vote.
All right. Our state senator, Chris Elliott, there, our returning champion, I should say. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
On this heart of mine, I keep my eyes wide open all the
to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Text line if you want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. We do appreciate the feedback. Mike says, if you ask Todd Ivey, meanwhile, his administration is perfectly normal. There's no problem getting informed on what to say by them. Just like the legislature last week. But he operates in a different space. In some ways, he is part of the messaging. I mean, it's useful. Listen, I need to hear from these guys. If it has to come in the form of Steve Flowers or Todd Stacey, that's just what we're going to have to live with. Or Yellowhammer News or, you know, the usual go-to safe outlets for these establishment types. So that's fine. And that's just the way it's got to be. We have a freedom of speech in this country, and their speech can be whatever they want it to be. But Todd Ivey doesn't even get K-Ivey. Shouldn't call him Todd Ivey. Todd Stacey is not even getting K-Ivey. Jay said, meanwhile, always benefited from the female vote. I know women that voted for her solely because of her gender continue to support her, and I don't know why and don't care, sadly. You know, I just had to call balls and strikes here and be gender blind. I know it's hard, especially in an era when we have boys going to girls' locker rooms, and that's okay, apparently. But you are still governor, regardless of your gender. You still have certain expectations, very minimal expectations, I might add. You don't have to be flashy. You don't have to be, you know, in front of the cameras all the time. But maybe a few times a year. Well, we haven't had that. It's just, she's not cut out for this. And it's kind of sad. Like, why do you even want to be governor? 251-343-0106. Keep the text coming. We'll get to more on the other side. Stick around. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.